Well, I call your attention to the Gospel of Luke to begin with, and then we're going to actually have the message out of Matthew. Now, I remember last week, I think I remember telling you this, that Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called the, what kind of Gospels? Synoptic. That's exactly right. Well, Matthew and Luke are going to be the ones that we look at this evening. And I want you to look with me at the Gospel of Luke chapter 6, beginning in verse 39. This is our third parable, and I've just simply entitled it tonight, Blind Guides. Blind Guides. Verse 39, "And he spake a parable unto them." And this is the parable. "Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? The disciple is not above his master, but everyone that is perfect or complete or mature," if you want to use that word, "shall be as his master. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye?" And so, as we have looked at that, I want us to think about the setting. I want us to think about the background here. This portion, along with the one that's in Matthew, Jesus is in the Galilee. Now, I talked about the Galilean ministry of the Lord, I don't know, within the last month. I don't remember exactly when, but I'd have to look back and see, but I know I talked about it within the last month, and how that it was the countryside, and how that Jesus went through their synagogues teaching, and how that he went among the villages and he would heal, which is what the prophecy of the Messiah said. And so you have the Lord, and he is in the Galilee. Well, coming out of Jerusalem, you have the Pharisees and the scribes, and they follow him, and they are wanting to basically accuse him of not being a religious man. We'll get to that when we get to the Gospel of Matthew. But here we see the parable for the first time when he says, "Can the blind lead the blind?" Well, the obvious answer to that is certainly not. Years ago, I used to do a youth activity, and the way that we would do this, it was to pull a joke on a person. And what we would do is we would get a 2x4, and we would set another 2x4 under it so you could get your fingers under it. And so you would have a young person, and they would be blindfolded, and they would stand on that, and they were to balance on the beam blindfolded. And so what we would do is you would, with them blindfolded, you would pick it up, but you'd only be about that far off the ground. And what you would do is your shoulders, which they could touch for a moment, you would begin to do this. And you would bend your knees and go down, but it felt like they were going up. And so when they would get up, you say, "Now, you okay up there?" And they would, "Yeah, I'm okay." "All right, now take your hands off of their shoulders." And here these guys are, they're kneeling down, and this thing's this far off the ground. And all of a sudden, one of them would begin to shake. It's like, "I'm losing it, I'm losing it." And this guy's like, "How far am I going to jump?" And all of a sudden, he would fall thinking that he's fixing the hit from about 3 feet, and it's just, boom, he's right there. And so when I think about the blind leading the blind, you know, when you're blindfolded, you're at a great disadvantage. When you have a blindfold on, sometimes that's just trouble. We leave little lights on in our house. One of the most irritating things that ever happens to me is if I'm walking through a dark house and I stub my toe. Now, you may not do that, but I'm telling you right now, when I do that, it makes me want to say my Sunday school lesson That's exactly, I mean, it just ticks me off. And so we usually leave some type of little light on because we don't want to have what happened to Papa Joe the other day. He got up in the middle of the night, walked down the hallway, went in the wrong door, and fell down his basement steps. So we don't want that to happen. But blind guides don't have any ability to guide blind people. And so he gives an example here. He says that, why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye? Now, in some circles, there's a controversy about to whom Jesus is referring here. I personally think that this analogy, when it talks about the disciple is not above his master, I think that he's talking to the 12 disciples and himself. And you're not greater than your master. And then it says, but this is what they were doing. They were looking at their brother who's got a little bitty speck of sawdust in his eye. And they're going, let me get that sawdust out of your eye. When I was in high school, I worked part-time when I wasn't playing ball. I worked part-time with a man named Tucker Boykin. Tucker was a hoot to work for. Every day, he thought he could beat me in basketball. He was about 5'6", 25 years older than me, never beat me a day in his life. But it didn't matter if it was 7 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the afternoon when we got back. I can take you right now. And I'm going, you can't beat me. And he's like, I got you this time. Well, when we were on the job doing those construction things, he taught me what little bit of carpentry I know. And if you would get a piece of sawdust in your eye, he would say, look up, look down, look all around. And he would say, quit whining about that little sawdust. Well, then when he would get one, he would say, oh, man, I got a log in my eye. And so you've got this mote, this little bitty piece of sawdust, but this guy has got a 2x4 or a floor beam of a house that's in his eye. In other words, he is much worse than the guy with the speck, but yet he wants to get the speck out of the other guy's eye. And so in verse 42, it says, how can you say this to your brother? Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye, thou hypocrite. Cast out first the beam that is in thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. In other words, if you want to be able to help somebody, take care of your own business first. All right? So if you've got a problem, take care of your problem, and then you can help somebody else. And so that is the way that Luke describes the blind leading the blind. So we have the blind guides here in the Gospel of Luke. Now I want you to go with me back to the Gospel of Matthew, and we're going to begin in Matthew 15. Matthew 15, beginning in verse 10. And in verse 10 it says, and he called the multitude. Now who is he talking to before he calls the multitude? Well, he is actually talking to the men that have come out of Jerusalem. We see that in verse 1. It says that the scribes, the Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem. So they come, and this is the question that they are asking. They're saying, why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? Now, what is the tradition of the elders? Well, what books of authority do they use in Judaism? Well, they use the Torah, also called the law. We sometimes call it the Pentateuch because a pentagram has five sides. The Pentagon has five sides. And so in mathematics, you have a penta, which is a five. And so you've got the five books of Moses. That is authoritative. It has Leviticus in it, which talks about the law. But they also have other books. They have the Talmud. And at this time, they had what was called the oral tradition. The oral tradition was where that they would teach things orally down through the generations. And so it had got to the point to where they didn't just have the 613 Mosaic laws. They had law and interpretation upon interpretation. And over the years, that became known as the traditions. And so the tradition was that when you come to eat, you have to wash your hands. Now, this is not like my grandmother was. When we would come out of the tobacco fields when I was a teenager, and we would be where she would say, go wash your hands and face. In other words, it's time to sit down, and I'd go in there and I'd take soap and I'd wash my hands and I'd wash my face and I'd sit down for what we call dinner. Dinner was lunch, supper was at nighttime, all right? Now you have lunch is lunch and supper and dinner are the same thing. But back then, we had dinner at 12 noon. And so we would sit there and we would wash our hands. That is not the washing that they're talking about here. This is a washing where that between every little course, they would go and they would get a basin, they would wash their hands, and it was a ceremonial thing. It was not actually a hygienic type thing. It was more ceremony. And it got to the point to where they would do it often, over and over and over again. If you ever visit Israel, you will go to certain places and they will have little baptistries. Sometimes your whole body can get in it. Sometimes it would be just a basin and they would wash their hands and wash their face in that little basin. You have several of those that are in the little Qumran community of the Essenes where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. And so you've got this ceremony, and all of Judaism was expected to know these laws, to know these traditions, and to wash their hands after every meal. When you get your pita, you would go wash your hands. When you get the hummus, you would wash your hands. When you get the olives, you wash your hands. When you go through all of these various things that would be involved in one of their meals, you washed. All ceremony. The disciples did not do that. And so Jesus answered and said unto them, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? In other words, he didn't even answer their question. He said, let me ask you something. He said, why do you go against the law of God, those 613 Mosaic laws, by adding things to it? So you've crossed over the line. Why do you do that? For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and thy mother, and he that had cursed father or mother, let him die the death. In other words, if you were to curse your parents, as far as Judaism was concerned and as far as the law of God was concerned, you might as well die because you're useless. Now, I tried to find out, whenever I think let him die the death, I was not able to connect these two, but there may be a connection. Perhaps you could find it. But the connection could be when it's die the death, it could mean what happened when they would dishonor parents. There could be a stoning. Now, there's never an instance in the Old Testament of a kid that ever got stoned. Never one that I've been able to find. But it could be that that child could have been stoned. And so when they are cursing father and mother, let him die the death, that either means let him be stoned or he is useless and he ought to just be dead. You know, it's like the old saying, some people just need killing. That's from that great theologian, John Wayne. All right. And so you've got the people and they are doing that. And Jesus says, so why do you transgress? He says, but you say, let me get my glasses on here. But you say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother is a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, and honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free. Thus you have made the commandment of God of none effect by your traditions, you hypocrites. Well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying. We'll go to that verse maybe in a moment. What is he talking about? Mark tells us a little bit about that, and it is called korban. If you don't know what korban is, that's where you would have someone that was a Pharisee, someone that is a scribe, someone that said, I am a follower of Moses. I keep the law. My righteousness is because I am devout. But they have a parent. Could be a mother, could be a father, could be both. The parents are destitute. Now remember, there was no Social Security. There was no big social net that they had in ancient times. And so the biblical mandate was, you take care of your aged parents. That is a very prominent thing in some cultures today, but then there's some cultures and they just go, let them die. And so here, you've got these people and they're going, oh, we know we're supposed to take care of them, but the money that we could use for that, that's been dedicated to God. That money's korban. In other words, this is God's money, so I can't use it to give my mom and daddy something to eat. This is God's money. I can't pay their medical bills. This is God's money. I can't get them a new robe. This is God's money. Now, that money was not hindered from them being able to use it. But when somebody would say, well, you got some money. Oh, that's korban. And so their parents would suffer against the commandment of honor thy father and thy mother in Exodus 20. And so you see that Jesus says that you're hypocrites. The verse that he used is found in Isaiah 29, verse 13. Here it says, back it up. Okay, there it is, verse 7. I was way down there. All right, you hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy unto you, saying, the people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and their honor unto me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Go back to Isaiah. All right, this is what Isaiah says, and this is what Jesus is referring to. There we go, 13. There we go. Okay. Wherefore the Lord saith, for as much as this people draw near to me with their mouth and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the precept of men. So that's what Jesus is referring to, which was a prophet that wrote 700 years before Jesus walked this earth. And so we see that he is having this as a background. Now, these are hypocrites. Now, you may not know this, but a hypocrite, it originally comes from what we would call a play actor. In other words, it's somebody that is playing a part that is not genuine. All of us know about actors and actresses in Hollywood and in, you know, theater groups in high school and college, and we know about people that play parts. I played the part one time in a play. I was Snoopy. I sat on the doghouse. I still can remember parts of that song. You know, bring on the soup dish, bring on the cup, bring on the bacon, and fill me up because it's supper time. And I had a chance to sing that. And so it was not, you know, not anything that ever made Broadway. And so anyway, you've got these people, and they are not honoring their parents, and they're claiming it's a korban. Now, I want you to see three things. Number one, I want you to see the enlightenment. In other words, Jesus, is going to enlighten these people, because all that the multitude has really known until he came on the scene is what the Pharisees and the scribes have taught them. They have taught them the traditions. They've taught them that you need to listen to what we have to say. And so beginning in verse number 10, it says, he called the multitude and he said unto them, hear and understand. Now, when you would have a rabbi and he would say, I want you to hear and understand, that goes way back to Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, there is something that I've often referred to in my messages as the Shema. And what that is that is an instruction, that is a teaching that the Jewish parents were to give to their children. And it talks about how that when you're sitting around the table, you talk about the Lord. You instruct them in the ways of the Lord. When you put them to bed, you talk about the Lord and the instruction of the Lord. And when they wake up in the morning, you talk about the instruction of the Lord. That is called the Shema in Deuteronomy 6. Here, Jesus is telling this multitude, Shema, I want you to hear and understand what I am about to tell you here. And so he says, verse number 11, not that which goeth into the mouth defileth the man. Whoa, that's different than what they have been told. What have they been told all their lives? The law of Moses. You've got Leviticus. Don't eat rabbits. Don't eat shellfish. Don't eat pigs. Don't eat unclean things. And now Jesus is saying right off the rip here, no doubt these guys can hear him as he's called a multitude. He's not paying attention to these guys anymore. He's saying, not that which goeth into the mouth defileth the man, but that which cometh out of the mouth, this defileth a man. And so he wants them to understand that things are different now. Do you remember the situation when Peter, I think it's Acts chapter 10. In Acts chapter 10, you've got Peter, and he is at Cornelius' house. And he is there, and he has this vision, and this sheet comes down from heaven. And all of a sudden, they've got all of these animals, clean and unclean, that's in that sheet that's been let down. And the voice says, arise and eat. And he goes, not so. I've never eaten an unclean thing. I've never had a piece of bacon. He just don't know what he was missing. I've never had shrimp. I'm telling you, I like them shrimp. I've never had rabbit. Neither have I. Many of you probably have grown up eating rabbit. I don't know why, but I always had a hard time thinking about eating Thumper. All right? And so you've got these unclean animals, and Peter is told, arise and eat. Not so. And then what was the voice? What I have said was clean is clean. Eat it all. That's why when I have somebody come along and they go, well, I don't eat pork. Is there a reason why? Well, if God told the Jews not to do it, then there's probably a reason for it, and so that's why I don't do it. I said, what about Acts 10? What I've made is clean. And they go, well, it had to be a reason. I understand that thinking. I know that you can live without an appendix, but God gave it to you for a reason. And you can live without it, but I don't want to live without it. Now, if I have to, I'll live without it. But I like keeping my tonsils and I like keeping my appendix. God made them. He gave them. Live without them, I can live without a kidney, but I'd like both. And so you've got this story here, and he is saying, it's not that what you're eating that defiles you. Now, every time these Pharisees and these scribes would have a meal, they made sure that it was kosher. Now, in Israel, let me tell you how strict these people are. When you go to a nice hotel, and we stay at nice places, when you go to a nice hotel, they will have two sets of silverware. They'll have two sets of plates. You have one that is for breakfast. You'll have another that is for dinner. The reason for that is because they do not want to cross-contaminate the foods. Now, you're not going to get a piece of bacon, but you get egg. And the first time I went, I'm thinking, egg and cheese got old. That was an omelet for my breakfast. So I got the bright idea. Okay, they do salads for everything. So I got a plate, walked over to the salad bar. I got tomatoes and I got onions and I got bell peppers and I got mushrooms. Chopped it up. I walked over to the guy that was doing the omelets and I said, put that in my cheese omelet. And so therefore I had a little variety with my breakfast. That set of dishes were washed and put away until the next morning, and that evening they had a whole different set so that there would be no crossing of the dietary problems that they have when things are quote-unquote kosher. They even hire rabbis to work the kitchen to make sure that the chefs do not cross-contaminate. I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. If you come to my house, there may be a plate that's been washed. It'll have a piece of chicken on it one day, and it might have a piece of ham on it the next day, and it might have lasagna the next day. You know? And it's going to be washed in between. I heard about one guy, and his sister came to live with him. And, you know, the old adage is that, you know, on the third day you hand them a shovel. And here she was. She hung around for about a week, and then it was 2 weeks, and, you know, she wasn't going nowhere, but she wasn't doing nothing. Wasn't helping out at the house. And so here he was. He was like, I got to get the message across here. And so after dinner, you know, she would always just go to the living room and gonna watch a little TV. Well, before she could get up and go to the television, he called his old dog over and he put his plate down and said, hand me your plate. He had put that down there and had the dog lick it. And he said, I just need old Blue to do the dishes tonight. That's the way I usually have him. Whenever I get a little tired, I just let him do the dishes, and he just licks them clean, and I just put them back up. She left the next day. She didn't want that. Well, what God has made, it's good. And so he says, it's not what you put in your mouth, it's what comes out of your mouth. That's a key thought. Now, if you keep reading in verse number 12, it says, then came his disciples and said unto him, in other words, he's hearing him tell the multitude this. So the disciples came and they say, Lord, knowest thou that the Pharisees were offended? When they heard you say that, it kind of bothered them. Do you know Jesus was not bothered that he bothered them? You know, if you speak the truth, that's just the truth. Now, I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm not going to lie to them. Now, sometimes I just won't say anything at all. But if you don't want what I would consider to be my truthful opinion, don't ask me. And so they say, the Pharisees were offended. So the enlightenment had begun. The second thing, though, is his explanation. This begins in verse number 13. And he says this, that every plant which my heavenly Father hath not planted shall be rooted up. Do you remember another place in Matthew where something similar to that happened? Matthew chapter 13, there was an enemy that came and sowed the tares. In the Greek, it's called darnel. They would sow that darnel in the wheat field. And what did the worker say? Should we not pull it up? He goes, no, no, don't pull it up. Let it grow together, and at the gathering, we will gather it. We'll gather the wheat, we'll gather the chaff, and we'll burn the chaff. And so here, there is the promise that there is a plant that the Father has not planted, but it'll be rooted up one day. May not be in your time frame, but in God's timing, it will be rooted up. Verse 14 says, let them alone. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. They be blind leaders of the blind. That's exactly what we read in the Gospel of Luke. Blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. If you don't know how to do something, you can't teach somebody else how to do that something. Does that make sense? I don't know how to work on an automatic transmission. I can't teach Brother George how to work on an automatic transmission. Now, I could tell him what automatic transmission fluid is. I could probably even show him how to check it and see if it was low on fluid or not. But I do not know how to put that thing up on a table, get a bunch of impact sockets out, and start ripping that thing apart. If I could rip it apart, but it's not going back together. Because I don't know anything about it. Now, every once in a while, you might get lucky about something. Let me just share this with you. How many of you men have ever, and maybe you ladies as well, how many of you have ever had a catalytic converter problem? One, two, nobody else. The church has had them because we've had some people rip us off. We have one van that is more expensive than the other van. I want to say that that one van, it's either $3,000 or $4,000 maybe for just the one. That's how expensive that cat was. We have an 04 Highlander. When Allison bought her new car, she said, they're not going to give me $300 for my old one. Do you want it? Yeah, give it to me. I'll take it. We'll drive it. 289,000 miles on it. The lights on the dashboard have come on until yesterday. I began fooling with this thing, and let me tell you what I did. Never done it. Never until Monday night, I'd never heard of this. And I'm not telling you to do this. I'm telling you, I did this, and for 2 days, it's worked. I put in the gas tank. It was half a tank of gas, which is 1-to-10 ratio. I put 1 gallon of lacquer thinner. That's what painters use. I put that in there, and all of a sudden, that car starts going. And so I started driving that thing 65 miles an hour down the road, and I'm thinking, if it blows up, I hope it don't explode. I just hope the motor goes bad. If it goes bad, then I'll have to buy another car, but that's okay. We're doing an experiment. I drove that thing hard for about 20, 30 minutes, parked it. When I got back in it, those lights were gone. Now, I'm not a mechanic. I might have ruined that car and just don't know it yet. I don't know how to teach anybody to be a mechanic except very, very easy type stuff. I would be like a blind man trying to lead another blind man. You can't teach what you don't have yourself. How are you going to take somebody to heaven when you're not even going there yourself? You say, well, I know I've heard people talk about believing on Christ, but you've never experienced it. And so you've got the blind leading the blind, and both of them are going to fall into a ditch. And so what are they doing? They're following the scribes. They're following the Pharisees. And what did Jesus say? Except your righteousness exceed that of the Pharisees, you will perish. And so we see that there is an explanation. He continues on with the explanation. Peter declares unto, or says to him, declare unto us this parable. What parable? The blind leading the blind. If both of them were blind, they're going to both fall into the same ditch. So explain that to us a little bit more. And Jesus kind of rebukes him. He says, are you also without understanding? Do you not understand that? That if both of you are blind, you're going to both fall into the same hole if you're, you know, holding on to each other. One's leading the other. He says that whatsoever entereth into the mouth goeth into the belly. So in other words, he is giving him a simple understanding, something that even the most basic human understands. We know this. From the time that we are babies, we learn this. We eat something with our mouth, it goes into our belly, and after a digestive journey, it comes out. That's what happens. It says that is what you have. It's cast out into the draught. Well, when you get to verse 18, he says, but those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile the man. So in other words, it's not the food that's going in, but it's the words that are coming out. And so as you look at that, he begins to talk about the things that come out that defile. And in verse 19, he begins by saying, out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. So what is that list? Well, I think that if you were to hold up a copy of the Ten Commandments, the two tablets, he's already alluded to honoring the parents. That would have been on the first table, but these are pretty much what's on the second table. You've got the murders, thou shalt not kill, and you've got the adulteries, thou shalt not commit adultery, etc. And so he is saying those things come out of the heart and ultimately come out in the words that we use. These are the things that defile a man. But to eat with unwashing hands, that doesn't defile a man. Now, I like eating with clean hands. But I don't want to have to go wash my hands after I eat a salad, and after I eat a main meal, and after I eat the dessert. Now, if I eat ribs, then I do that. I don't eat ribs with a knife and fork. I usually will pick them up. If I've got juicy chicken wings, I do the same thing. I'll eat that. I'll go to the bathroom. I'll say, excuse me. I'll go to the restroom, turn that water on, wash my hands, wash my mouth, then go back, and then I'll finish everything else with a fork. But I don't do that after every course unless you're eating something liquidy, all right? And so we see the explanation that it's not the food that goes in, it's the thoughts and the words that come out, all right? Let me give you a final thing. I call this the edict. So we have the enlightenment, we have the explanation, and we have the edict. Look at verse 14. Let them alone. Don't listen to them. Don't trust them. Don't accept what they've got to say. I don't care what they say. Leave them alone. They're blind and they cannot lead you to life. Leave them alone. Now, this theme is not just for Luke 6 and for Matthew 15. As we come to a close tonight, I want you to look with me at Matthew 23. I want you to see this last sermon. This is the most scathing sermon that Jesus preaches. He talks about woe unto you. I think it's 6 or 7 times he uses the word woe. And he calls them hypocrites. I mean, harsh, harsh, harsh words. So in Matthew 23, he begins by saying in verse number 2, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Now I've explained to you that Moses' seat is the seat of authority in the synagogues. I have a picture of me sitting in Chorazin in the synagogue at Chorazin on the seat of Moses. And so that was the place where the leader would be. The Pharisees, the scribes, that's where they want to sit. They want to be able to tell everybody else what to do. They just don't want to do it themselves. It says in verse number 3, he says that whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but do not after their works. In other words, don't do what they do, for they say and do not. In other words, they tell you, well, you need to take care of this, you need to do this, but they don't offer one little finger's help in doing it. And so we see that he is just ripping them over and over and over. They won't move one little finger. They look for the chief seats in verse 6. And then he goes on to talk about if you're going to be great among those people and great among you, you got to be the greatest servant. That's found in verse 11. Now, the verses that I want you to focus on tonight, because our time is gone, look with me at verse 16. Woe unto you, you blind guides. There's our blindness again. What does a guide do? A guide takes you to places, teaches you things, admonishes you, instructs you in the history, in the way that things are supposed to be. Woe unto you, you blind guides, which say, whosoever swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whosoever shall swear by the gold in the temple, he is a debtor, or he is under obligation. Look at verse 17. You fools and blind. For whether is greater the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? In other words, they got the cart before the horse. And so, in 16 they're called blind. 17 they're called blind. Look at verse 19. You fools and blind. Whether it is greater the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? So in other words, they had that flipped. I want you to look at verse 24. You blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Look at verse 26. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. And so we see that throughout the book of Matthew and Luke, and we didn't go to Mark, but Mark's got something to say about it as well. Just didn't have time to really get into his gospel tonight. But you see that these blind guides, they're more concerned about the external than they are about what's coming from the inside. And what we need to know is this. We need to know that what is in our heart will ultimately come out in our speech. People can hide it for a while, but ultimately your speech betrays you. A few years ago, I don't remember exactly where I was at. I was either at a fast food place or I was at maybe a Publix deli. I can't remember exactly. But there was a sweet lady that was waiting on me, and I told her what I wanted or what I'd ordered, and so she fixed it, and she handed it to me, either the bag or the deli meat or whatever it was, and she said, I want you to have a blessed day. And I stopped and I looked at her and I said, you're a Christian, aren't you? And she said, yes. How do you know that? I said, your speech betrays you. Christians use words like that. Have a blessed day. you and I ultimately tell people who we are by the things that we say. Now, I know there are people that come to church and they can speak the lingo, but ultimately it's going to come out, because what's on the inside is going to come forth. Look at verse 18. If you go back to our passage in chapter 15, in verse number 18, I think that's my verse. But those things which proceed out of the mouth cometh forth from the heart, and they defile the man. So, if it comes out of the mouth, good shot that it's in the heart. Can the blind lead the blind? Nah. You got to have it before you can give it to somebody else. Most teachers can only take their students so far. And it is a rare student that goes beyond their master. Rare. Every once in a while, you may have someone that exceeds their teacher, their mentor, their rabbi, their instructor. Every once in a while. But it's not very often. If you're going to have an instructor, you find one that's got sight. You don't want to be led by the blind.